This is Chris Bloomer on Sunshine Radio, and delighted to welcome onto the show today an old friend of mine. He's had an incredible career with journalism, news and sports, and also he's a published author. And here to chat about his new book, Rock Legends at Rockfield, is the one and only Jeff Collins.
Hi Chris, how are things?
I'm not too bad, Jeff. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you, very good.
So let's talk about these legendary studios then. Rockfield in Monmouth. They have been home to some incredible stories over the years. Some of the biggest bands in the world have recorded there. Some of the iconic tunes in history were made there. When did you first go to Rockfield and what got you interested in the studios?
It was as a teenager where I used to have all these records like, you know, Night of the Opera, Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, and some big records by the likes of Rush, Sabbath, of course, Black Sabbath. And I'd be thinking, I can't believe they've recorded down the road from where I live in Cardiff, in Monmouth. And funny enough, the Stereophonics obviously recorded there along with the Manic Street Preachers. And I remember talking to the late Stuart Cable when, you know, I wrote a book together with him. And he said the same thing. He remembers listening to the Rush albums and thinking, there's no way they came to Wales to do this. And so I was intrigued. So I started off by trying to write a magazine article for Classic Rock magazine. And the more I got into it, the more the bands replied. And they all absolutely loved this studio. And it just thought to me, it just struck me, this would make a great book. There are so many great stories. This would make a fascinating book. So I went up to visit the studio in 2007, had a tour around there. And once I saw the layout of the place and I got a feel for how it looked, it then made sense into, you know, what the bands were telling me. I could visualize where they were and what they were doing, and the book came about.
I mean, it's an incredible story. So brothers Charles and Kingsley Ward went from building a home studio in the loft of their farmhouse to running one of the world's most celebrated residential recording studios.
Yeah, because it was the first one in the world. It was the first place you could go and just stay there. So normally, you know, imagine you're working away in a studio, a great riff just comes into your head, but it's 6 o'clock, you've got to leave, go back to the hotel, and then you come back tomorrow and you can't remember where you were. So you speak to a lot of these bands who've been at Rockfield, and they stay up overnight, you know, they're struck by inspiration, they don't have to go to bed. And yeah, these two brothers, Charles and Kingsley Ward, they were in a band, rather imaginatively called the Charles-Kingsley Combo, in the 60s, and they went down to Abbey Road, met George Martin, and when they came back, they kept thinking, you know, why do we have to go to London? Because studios at the time, even up to the 90s, were only in London. Why do we have to go there? Let's start our own. So they kicked their grandmother out of her room, put her in another room, and they turned that into a loft. And then eventually, as they started charging local bands £5 a time to record, make an acetate of a vinyl record and send it off to record companies. Then they converted a sort of horse stable and a pigsty, and various farm buildings were slowly turned into recording studios. And even when famous bands were there, like Queen, you know, they would often say, we'll be recording. And Kingsley Ward would come in and say, I need some help to get the hay bales in, or actually, we need a bit of help milking the cows. Can you all come outside and help me? And they would, you know, so in the middle of recording, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, for example, they'd be off putting together hay bales and bringing them in because the farm was still working at the same time as the studio.
You just touched on Queen there. I mean, A Night at the Opera, one of the most famous albums of all time, that was recorded at Rockfield Studios, and Bohemian Rhapsody was made there as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. People might have seen it in the recent Bohemian Rhapsody biopic where, you know, it showed them recording there. But, you know, that famous end line, the story goes Freddie Mercury was sitting in a room at Rockfield looking for inspiration for the end of the song, and he saw a weather vane turning in the courtyard and thought, ah, any way the wind blows. And that was the final line, you know, to the song. And they almost lost the song, believe it or not, because at the time, you only had 8-track tapes, and you could only have 8 channels to record on. So they were just recording over and over this, and the producer got a bit worried. And when they looked at the tape, all the acetate had worn off, all the black part of the tape had worn off, and it was see-through, it was transparent, it was becoming crumbly. So they were worried they were going to lose everything. So they had to quickly make a backup copy to make sure that song was not lost for all time. Yeah, that was certainly one of the first big hits for Rockfield. People often said they would go to Rockfield so they could get that Queen sound. And I remember, well, that was glam rock band from the 80s and 90s, Tiger Tails, saying they went there and they wanted to use the same desk as Queen so they could sound like Queen. And I remember the lead singer then saying, yeah, but of course we didn't. but everybody wanted to use that.
I mean, there's so many stories in this book, Rock Legends at Rockfield. Robert Plant, when Led Zeppelin came to a grinding halt with the sad death of John Bonham, he went to Rockfield to record his first solo album at the age of just 32.
Well, he did his first four there, and he kept saying, you know, after all that mad stuff in Zeppelin, all the late nights with security guards bringing drugs and this just wild existence, suddenly he was in this very pastoral, rural place where it's quiet and peaceful and lots of mad musicians in the pubs. And he loved it so much, he moved to Monmouth for a while. And it was funny because I remember Carol Decker from Howe saying when she was in Monmouth, because she went to move there as well because she loved Rockfield so much. When she was there, she bumped into Robert Plant at a Victoria Wine. And for the first few times, she just thought he was a guy who liked wine and a chat. And it was only on the third occasion she realised who he was and thought, I had no idea it was a real bona fide rock god I was bumping into. I think one of my favourite stories, when Marillion were there recording their second album, they decided everyone goes to this pub called the Nag's Head, and it's right at the back of Monmouth, the furthest point from where Rockfield Studios is. There's a load of other pubs you could stop on the way, but everyone wanted to go to the Nag's Head. So they wanted to go there, were a bit short of money, didn't have a taxi fare, didn't fancy the long walk. So they borrowed a little dinghy that they found, put it on the River Monnow, sailed round the corner, and as they're getting to the Nag's Head, the keyboard player Mark Kelly realised, well, actually, how are we going to stop? We don't have paddles. So he took a penknife out, stabbed the dinghy, then him and Fish, the singer, realised, okay, now we're sinking. So they swam to the shore, walked into the Nag's Head, dripping wet, ordered a pint of lager, and then these two voices chirped next to him, all right? And it was Robert Plant and Dave Edmonds popping at the bar. It was just like a real centre for musicians, that place.
Was Dave Edmonds the first name that recorded there?
So absolutely. He actually lent the brothers, Charles and Kingsley, some money to buy some of that studio equipment. And as payback, they allowed him as much recording time as he wanted. And that, of course, is where he first did I Hear You Knocking. That was a big hit single in the 70s. That was the first big Rockfield hit single. I think it was 6 weeks at number one in the UK, and it was number one in America. And that was the first song that really, you know, put Rockfield on the map. Because, again, what makes recording studios successful is hit records. The more hits you have, the more the profile of studios is raised, you know.
So many rock and roll legends had recording sessions there at Rockfield and tended to party a little bit hard whilst in between their recording. There's some incredible stories in the book about those tales as well.
Yeah, I mean, you get like food fights between Motorhead and Simple Minds. they had a food fight. Simple Minds felt really bad about that and actually cleared up the mess. Oasis did their first album down the road in Monnow Valley, the sister studio to Rockfield. It used to be Rockfield's rehearsal studio. Charles took Monnow Valley and made it a studio in its own right, and King kept Rockfield. So Oasis did the first album in Monnow Valley, they did the second in Rockfield. But when they were at Rockfield doing the second album, even though the first album definitely made it was a massive success and made millions, the royalties hadn't come through yet, so they were still penniless. And they were a bit hacked off by this. So one day they decided to trash the place. So they turned up all the plants and damaged all the furniture and, you know, destroyed a lot of things. In fact, Liam Gallagher threw a TV out of the window. You know, he wanted to be typical rock and roll style. Threw a TV out of the window. Unfortunately, it was still plugged in. So it just hung limply halfway down the wall. But after they trashed it, they were cleaning up. And this photographer, who had been following them for 18 months and was with them, was a bit embarrassed. And he apologized to one of the maintenance staff who was cleaning up and said, look, I'm ever so sorry about the mess they've made. And this maintenance guy just looked at him and said, mess? You should have been here when Ozzy Osbourne was here. Now that was a mess, which I thought was really nice, you know.
You've been lucky enough, obviously, to meet and interview so many of these rock and roll legends for the book. You got to chat to Lemmy, didn't you, from Motorhead?
Oh, I mean, yeah, Lemmy was a great guy. That was a fascinating interview. He was there with both Hawkwind and Motorhead. Yeah, I got to meet him backstage in Cardiff. And we did this interview. You know, he loves playing slot machines. I remember I first saw him, he's playing the slot machine, and I just asked him, you know, are you winning? And he said, not really. He said, it's my money. He was a big rider, you know, the thing when most artists ask for things to be backstage when they do a gig. His big thing was Kinder eggs. He loved Kinder eggs. There'd be a big pile of Kinder eggs. He said, when we do the interview, he said, after every question, you've got to drink a shot of Jack Daniels with me. So I did this interview, and after every question, me and him were downing a Jack Daniels. But by question 29, there were two Motorhead singers in front of me, which was a bit disconcerting. Yeah, and I got to spend the day there with Robert Plant. I was just trying to pin Robert Plant down because he's got so many homes, and I rang him, and with all the interviews I do, I don't like taking them off the internet. I like to speak to people in the flesh, make sure we've got everything correct, and it was what they genuinely said. So I tried to pin Robert Plant down, and I thought I'd do him over the phone and interview the phone if I couldn't, you know, get him to a location. So I was saying to him, should I do you in your home in Birmingham? No, I'm never there. What about your home in London? No, I'm never there. How about your home in West Wales? No, I'm never really there. I'm thinking, good grief, you know, that the University Press can't afford to send me to his homes in New York or Bahamas. So eventually he said, well, why don't we go to Rockfield? And I said to him, well, look, if you can come on May the 13th, I've got your band there, except Phil Collins, who's in New York writing Tarzan the musical, but he sent us a message for you. But I said, your band's there. So we all went to Rockfield and spent the whole day there just chatting and, you know, about the albums they'd done and the good times they had. And it was great. I remember one of the things that did make me laugh, yeah, Robert Plant, when I read him the message that Phil Collins had sent me to read to them, saying, you know, I had a great time there, really enjoyed my time with your band, Yeah, Robert Plant just looked at him and said, yeah, of course Phil Collins enjoyed playing with us. Of course he loved being with us. I mean, he was in Genesis, wasn't he? so that made me chuckle.
The Britpop era in the mid-90s, so many huge influential bands from that time recorded their albums, and there was a run, wasn't there, for Rockfield. They had so many sort of number one albums in sort of 96, 97 from the likes of Oasis, Black Grape, Boo Radley, Charlatans and Ash that were all recorded there.
That's right. They had five in a row, five number ones from those bands. As you say, the Boo Radley's big hit, Ash, Black Grape, yeah. And it moved on again, you know, as the years rolled on, because Sabian went there and had a few hit albums. As we were saying, a lot of artists have seen, you know, Robert Plant had been there and Rush and Judas Priest and Motorhead and Black Sabbath and Queen, and they just wanted a piece of that action. So again, yeah, in the 90s, a lot of those bands, Coldplay did their first album there. And in fact, Rockfield directly inspired one of their main songs, where Yellow, of course, their first big hit. Now, being from sort of London area, where there's sort of light pollution, you can't really see the sky that well. As they were relaxing after recording one day out in the courtyard with a drink or two or nine, the bass player looks up at the sky and says, oh, good grief, you know, look at the stars, see how they shine. And Chris Martin said, oh, I'll have that. And of course, that's the opening line of Yellow, you know, directly inspired by the night sky at Rockfield.
There are so many incredible stories in this book of yours, Rock Legends at Rockfield. An ideal Christmas present, no shadow of a doubt about that, for music lovers or anybody who's interested in finding out more about this incredible studio in Monmouth. It's been fantastic to chat to you again, my friend.
Excellent. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much indeed. Jeff Collins, Rock Legends at Rockfield, out right now.